We've got Dick Vitale coming up for you. Dick Vitale working with Geico. So we got to have some time with him. I was supposed to talk to him for 15 minutes. We ended up talking for 50. And I've got about 40 minutes of the conversation for you because the back end of it, we just started talking tennis and family and it didn't seem appropriate to put on the pod. But there's plenty of really personal stuff in there. I think you're going to enjoy it. I met Dick in a hotel in Chicago probably 20 years ago. And he was so genuine and nice, and he had these really soft hands. I'm thinking to myself, Dick Vitale's got to get a manicure, I don't know, three times a week. But, you know, when you meet your, I don't want to call him like a hero to me, but a guy that you see on television all the time, you wonder, is he going to be a nice guy? What's he like? And he couldn't have been more friendly. And you wonder if it's real. Well, after sitting with him for 50 minutes, after he's supposed to sit for 15, I'm like, wow, this guy is just the greatest. He's got a phenomenal story on Bob Knight helping Dick get to the Basketball Hall of Fame. And after you're done listening to this podcast, or sometime in the future, I recommend watching his Hall of Fame speech. It's really, really well done about 10 years ago. He's just vintage Vitale, and he's just got some great stuff and a lot of love for his family. So Dick coming up, I want to shout out Zach LaVine for a second, who absolutely 1,000% belongs in the NBA All-Star game. He's led the Bulls in scoring his last 10 games. 24, 26, 39, 35, 46, 26, 30, 37, 30, 38. And the Bulls win. I'm talking to you on Sunday right now, so it was last night against Sacramento. If you're not watching the Bulls, and I'm thinking that many people are not yet, it is incredibly impressive how Zach has transformed his game. He's a better passer. He's better going to the basket. He threw down a dunk the other day in transition with massive authority. And I think it's partly because he gets no calls. All right, if you're not going to give me any whistle, then I've got to just be a beast going to the rim. This guy just keeps getting better. And I'm amazed at how seemingly easy it is for not just Zach LaVine, but he's one of them, but NBA players nowadays, they can do a step back, going away from the hoop, hand in your face, and bury a 25-foot jumper. I mean, those are incredibly tough shots, but these guys are just so incredibly talented. And Zach, for him, that release is just true. It is effortless. Bulls are playing pretty good basketball, 13-16. Billy Donovan deserves a ton of credit. We'll delve into that more later in the week. We'll have a Bulls pod for you coming up later, a couple days from now. We're going to have on David Adelman, who is a longtime college basketball coach, longtime viewer of the NBA. He's got some great Bulls thoughts for you. I think you'll really enjoy that coming up later in the week. But before we do get to Dick Vitale, I want to remind you, the Windy City Podcast is brought to you by Manscaped, the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. I've got the whole kit, the 3.0 kit, which has got all these tools and formulations so you can have the perfect package. Look, it's got the best ball hair trimmer you'll ever have, the Lawnmower 3.0. It's incredible. And you got the LED lights so you can do the precise shave. It's waterproof. You can do it in the shower. A lot of people like to do that. Less cleanup job right there. It's a beautiful thing. You get two free gifts into the perfect package. You get a pair of high-performance Manscaped boxer briefs, which are awful nice. And they, you know, get you feeling good all day long. And then you get the travel shed bag. So, you know, when you're on you're heading on that trip, you got your sweet Manscaped stuff all in the what I used to call back in the day the Dop Kit. But now they call it the travel shed bag. Use the promo code FANSIDED20. That's the key here. It's FANSIDED20 when you go to manscaped.com. You get 20% off, free shipping, all of it. And you get the Lawnmower 3.0 kit. It's awesome. Check it out. Manscaped.com. FANSIDED20, 20% off. Treat yourself right. Without further ado, let's get to our guy, Dick Vitale.
Showtime.
The whistle. He banks it in at the buzzer.
What a shot.
He hit it.
Are you serious? Wow. Can't believe it. Super soft. Grayson Allen with an acrobatic score.
Get this in. The two donors.
Oh, getting us one of the great plays. Oh, the diaper dandy. What a reverse jam.
I was watching your Hall of Fame speech today. You it was beautiful, the tribute you gave your wife and your family and everybody else, too, for the record.
And I really did. It was unbelievable. The funny part about it, you know, Mark, that wasn't my speech. I rehearsed 5,000 times, and when I got up there, I said, I'm just going to go for my heart. And I went for my heart, and it went really well.
Well, let's jump off right there. And Dick Vitale with us here, working with Geico. Diggy V, I watched your videos. Did you really dump that Gatorade on you multiple times? Is that a true story, or is that the beauty of production?
Oh, no, that's absolutely real. Trust me. We did actually, I think it was three takes. They were able to get it with three takes. And, you know, three times changing clothes, getting soaked. But it's so much fun. The people there, they made it such a they treated me like royalty. They really did. My wife and I were just absolutely in awe of the way they treated me. From the moment I came on, from the wardrobe people meeting me, the people will give you food. I mean, it's just, don't tell them. It's stealing money, man. Doing that. Anybody does a commercial and they would moan and groan about, oh, look at all the time it takes. So, me, I loved every moment of it. I would have stayed there 3 days, 4 days, 5 days. I just had a blast.
Okay. I was like, did he really dump that on him multiple times? But your parents would never have allowed you to complain about what's going on in the commercial. That would have not gone over well in the Vitale household growing up.
Oh, absolutely. My family was one of, they were my greatest inspiration in my life. My mom and dad, Mark, were uneducated, as I said in the speech, fifth grade education, but they had a doctorate of law. And they always taught me and made me believe that I could do whatever I want to do. I lost my eye as a kid, and I thought it was the end of the world. And my mother kept saying, big deal, so you got one eye. What's the big deal? You can be a success. And, you know, I'd give anything today for her to see the home I live in, the people I've met, the places I go, and what's happened in my life, because it does not happen without the love and the guidance and the inspiration I received from my mom and dad. My father worked. Yesterday I talk about Wisconsin and Iowa in the basketball game. Tomorrow, when I get done with you, I talk to the coach at Texas Tech. But tomorrow I sit at courtside, courtside from my house. But 2 o'clock I do Kansas and Texas Tech. I mean, it's just unbelievable. You know, I pinch myself every day to know in its great country that I've been able to make the kind of living I've made doing something I love.
I look back on it because you were this super successful coach. You're getting an opportunity to coach Detroit. No one was paying attention to Detroit basketball. You've got them in the tournament, and then you get to go to the NBA. And I know it didn't go particularly well, but you were going to get other opportunities, and you weren't dying to do television at the time. Did you ever get even close to going back, even once you started having success?
Well, you know what happened? I was thinking about wanting to get back to college where I felt that long. The NBA was one I got fired really for one reason, myself. I earned to be fired because I kept complaining all the time to the owner about we can't win. We can't. I could coach till I'm blue in the face, and we're not going to beat Kareem and the Lakers. We're not going to beat Dr. J and the Sixers. We need more players. I'm going to get players. I can't. And he was so good to me. The owner was just a beautiful man, Bill Davidson, and he treated me as fair as one can be treated. And he kept saying, Dick, we know it's going to take 5 years or so. Relax. Because your energy, your knowledge, your enthusiasm. I said, I can't take this suffering and beat 7 times in a row, whatever. And we ended up, my career, I think, some 30 wins and 52 losses. I don't know, some crazy number. But the bottom line is I created a problem where eventually, and my wife kept telling me, you got to listen to your wives. My wife kept telling me, you can't keep saying that to an owner. And finally, November 8th, 1979, the phone rang. And when the phone rang, my beautiful administrative assistant, Madeline, said, before you come for the shoot-around today, because we have a shoot-around, we're playing the Sixers, Dr. J that night, and you remember certain things in your life. And she said, before you come, Mr. Davidson stopping over your house wants to talk to you a minute. My wife says to me, you're getting fired. I said, you're crazy getting fired. It was only, I don't know, 10 games into the season. I moved 4-6, something like that, 4-8, I don't know, something like that. But I said, getting fired? Well, you're out of your mind. And you know what I got, what I'm working with. I'm young, You can't talk the way last night. You talk at the corner. You can't do this. You can't do that. You can't stand the losing. So anyway, sure enough, pulls up to the car. His big limousine with his driver. Driver knocks on the door. Meantime, my wife leaves the house. She goes, I've shared this in a book or two. People get a kick out of it. She goes around the block, she said. She kept running, waiting for the limo to leave. She said, prepare yourself to get fired. I'm telling you. Sure enough, Mr. Davidson doesn't speak a whole lot in terms of a lot of words. He's very businesslike. He walked in. And I said, how you doing, Mr. Davidson? How you doing, Dick? And we sit down, and he says, just made a coaching change. And I said, excuse me? What is coaching change? Well, I don't want to tell you, but I guess it means that we're not going to be coaching. So you're being fired? He said, yeah. But I don't want to lose you. I want you to work with us. I want to use you as an executive vice president. Give me all this title stuff and all, and stay with us. I love your energy, just that. And I said, Davidson, I cry, and I'll be honest with you. Yeah. You know, my buddy used to always label me a boy of baller dream. Growing up as a kid, teaching in elementary school in the 70s. I mean, I was teaching elementary school, man, back in I started when I got into out of college. And in the 70s, I'm teaching sixth grade before I went to Rutgers, coaching in high school. And here I am now with the owner of the Pistons a few years later. I mean, so I was a boy of bullet dream, and now my dream is being taken from me. And you know, Mark, I tell people all the time, you know, loads of motivational speaking for 40 years. I've been with the Washington Speakers Bureau, and I tell them in my speeches all the time, you know, life is not smooth. You have ups, you have downs. My wife finally kicked me out of the house. Let me tell you what happened. All of a sudden, I get a call when I get fired from a fellow by the name of Scotty Connell. Scotty was the head of NBC Sports at one time, then became, in terms of remotes, became the head of ESPN. So Scotty called me up. He said, I just read there was a transaction that you were let go by the Pistons. I have just moved to this new network, and I want you to do our very first big college game as the analyst. And I said, I'm not interested. Are you kidding me? I don't know about TV. I have no desire for TV. I want to get back coaching in college. So I get off the phone, tell my wife what happened. She says, why don't you just go out? You're sitting here moping. I was watching Luke and Laura on General Hospital, man. so depressed. And I'm making this the easiest interview you've ever had. So the bottom line was he called me back again, which I got lucky he did, 10 days later. He said, I'm taking one last shot. We have this game on December 5th. The ball in Wisconsin, the poor number one in the country. Last night during the shock because Wisconsin was in the game, my producer said, I got a treat for you. Watch this. And they rolled into the game. My opening of my first game I ever did in 42 years at ESPN. And my partner said last night, man, you haven't changed. You're still talking a lot. You're still talking. And that was my first. And then he called me up after that and he said, look, you got three things we can't teach. Your energy, your knowledge, and you're not afraid to give an opinion. But you have no clue, zero, when to come in, when to come out. He said, I'm going to assign to you the best of the best. He's a Hall of Famer, Jim Simpson, who came from NBC, came with Scotty, became the first signature broadcaster with ESPN. And I owe Jim so much. Every day it's a little prayer for a guy like Jim because he was so good to me. He took me under his wing. We would do games. We'd go to lunch. At lunch, he would throw things at me and I'd have to make a response to get in and out. You know, it's not as easy as people think. When to get in, when to get out, and to share an opinion. Sometimes I go over and they know that because I just get so enthusiastic about what I want to talk about. But anyway, it's worked out pretty good, 42 years.
The enthusiasm part of it, Dick, where do you trace that to? I think what you said, you know, at the start there, your mom coming at you with, hey, you lost an eye, you got one eye. Like, there's a lot of parents there that would have been really sad about their kid and wondering what was possible. And I mean, I don't know if it was like instant with your mom, but that's a huge teaching moment right there. It feels like a big deal.
My mother and father were such dedicated people, family that came from, my mom had between the sisters and brothers at 9 in her family. My father had 8 of the sisters on his family. and they were all blue collar. They had one common denominator. Every one of them was always about their family, always about three meals on the table, a nice house to live in, and just family, family, family. And I had so much love for my uncles, my aunts, sad in a way, because I told my wife just this the other day, sometimes you get emotional even talking about it, but 18 of them are gone. And just, they played such vital roles in my life. They really did. They were always so encouraging. I don't know if they felt sorry for me a little bit because I had the one eye or whatever, but they couldn't do enough. They always praised me no matter what I did. My wife mentioned it the other day. She says, when my uncles used to come to watch me pitch Little League, and she knew my uncles later, not when I was pitching Little League. And man, I could do no wrong. I was the greatest pitcher in the world. One time, I'm pitching a no-hitter. This made the papers. Somebody sent me the article. I got the article in my office about, I don't know, maybe 6 months ago. The guy says, here's an article when you pitched in a Little League. And I pitched a Little League, and I was pretty good. I threw hard. And I struck out, I think, 15 of the 18 batters in a six-inning game. And coming down with two outs, perfect game. Perfect game against one of the top teams in the league. And the kid hits a ground ball by the first baseman. And the first baseman should have caught the ball, according to my uncles. And they went ballistic with the and they went, my uncles, my Uncle Tom, Uncle Mike, Uncle Frank, one of the great thrills of my life was inviting them to be my guest when we got the NCAA tournament and we played the number one team in the country, Michigan, up in Rupp Arena, my last game I coached in college. I flew my uncles into Detroit, and then I had them come with the team on the bus the whole bit. And it was just a great thrill to have the family there with me. But, you know, that's where I got my excitement and enthusiasm. I think it's from my family. And I think a lot of it with my eye, too. A lot of people say they think that I made up for my situation by being this energetic guy. I was looking at my yearbook the other day in high school. And I was trying to look for it the other day again. I mean, I took it the other day a few months back. I can't find the other thing. But under my picture said, everybody's buddy, man. Always see it. And I've always tried to be that way. I think the one thing I learned from my parents was also never hold grudges. Never. I think one of the problems we have in life, Mark, we have so much hate going on in our nation and not much love. And my mother used to always say to me, and I remember this as a kid, Richie, treat people, was never Dick, by the way. It was never Dick, never Richie. Yeah. Richie, treat people how you want to be treated. If you treat people like you want to be treated, you'll have so much fun in life and many, many friends. And I really believe that. I think we have a problem out there. People don't treat one another with the kind of respect they should.
Yeah, I got to get a couple questions in on what's going on in college hoop here, or else I'm going to get in trouble here, Dick. So, but this is, I really just appreciate you sharing the story. Big Ten, who do you think is at the top of the conference right now? I mean, you got three teams in the top five. This is the best Big Ten we've seen in a long time. Who do you like the most?
You know, I did a game last night, Wisconsin. Iowa looked very good last night. If they continue playing defense to go with their offense, because the kid Garza, without a doubt, is the national player of the year. To me, it's not even close. He is the national player of the year. He's like a 25 points a game, leads the nation in scoring. Iowa can be a factor, except the fact that I really wonder how consistent their defense will be. The last four games, they played really strong defense. You got to like Michigan. I mean, what is there not to like? They got size. They got good guard play. They believe in themselves. I'm hoping to do a Michigan game in about another 10 days or so. And then Illinois is coming. I mean, the one thing about the Big Ten, and I said last night during the game, it's unforgiving. I mean, you could turn around, have a great year, and lose four quick games in 2 weeks, two games each week. I mean, it's unbelievable. Like right now, Wisconsin's struggling a little bit. They're a good basketball team. The league might have 9 to 10 teams in the Big Dance.
Yeah, and you just ran through it, and this is no slight at all. It's just how good they are. You'd even mention Ohio State. Just, you forget about them because it's just so deep.
Look, Buckeyes have done a hell of a job. Chris Holtman has got to be up for – he and I think Juwan Howard will be in the running for coaching here in the Big Ten because they both were not expected to be where they're at. Even Juwan Howard, even a step above that because they weren't even rated all year. And what they've done – now, can they continue this as we get into the – part of the season when they play Illinois and Iowa and those teams. So we'll find out.
What's your take on why Duke and even Carolina, and you're seeing Kansas, they're probably going to be in the tournament, obviously, but they, for them, they're having a down year. Michigan State, so many of the blue bloods, Kentucky, is it because of the pandemic? Is it because the game is changing? How do you see it?
This year has been a really a weird year, totally weird. I mentioned yesterday, and you know, I don't know if people agree with me or not, that's certainly up to them, but I mentioned yesterday in the Wisconsin game. Normally at Wisconsin, they have such Badger fever. Fans just unbelievable. They made a run at Iowa in that game last night. They down 16, came all the way back. I don't remember exactly. I think they cut it to 3 or 2, okay? But about 5 minutes ago. And I said during the game, if this wasn't a real situation
right.
with the power, the adrenaline, what it does to a team, we're forgetting the value of the sixth man. Kentucky lost a host of close games. I'll bet you if those 23,000 or 22,000 were in the crowd, the passionate Kentucky fans, what an advantage that is. I mean, you still have, obviously, a slight home court advantage because you're sleeping in the same bed, you're shooting at the same vision, the baskets, the whole bit. And that's a home court advantage to a certain extent. But it's not the same as you're getting that edge with the crowd there giving you that lift when you're struggling. And I think also the problem, you mentioned pandemic. The pandemic's been a problem because many of these teams are young. Many of the teams you talked about are filled. Well, the top three teams in recruiting last year were Kentucky, was one, two was Duke, three was Carolina. Well, what they got in common? They've all been struggling basically, right? And I think the pandemic hurt them because they couldn't have those cupcake games part of their season, play 5-6 games, guys get familiar with one another, learn a little bit about college basketball, get the acclimated to what they're going to face. They couldn't have those kind of games. And then they didn't have, prior to that, you were always able to have a couple of exhibition games. You couldn't have those exhibition games. And then prior to that, you couldn't come back to the school early enough. I mean, coach was telling me last night, Coach Gard of Wisconsin, he said, my kids, I didn't see them for months, like 6 months. We sent them home in March when the pandemic broke. Then they came back like in September. They were all able to come back. I think all of that stuff together created a problem to where I think the veteran teams were able to have. You look at Baylor, Gonzaga, those teams, you know, they're great, they're skilled, they're talented, but they got veterans. They got players that have been through it.
I want to ask you just philosophy, college basketball, and Bob Knight presented you for the Hall of Fame. One of the greatest or the greatest coach in the history of college basketball, wherever you want to put him, Coach K, he's in the team photo. I'm wondering, are we going to see a change maybe as soon as maybe it's even happening now where that style can't work now? And even the style of just the coach up and down and sort of playing the game while he's coaching, like that guy might, because it's different in the NBA now. I'm wondering if we'll see it filter down to college where coaches are going to have to take a different, I don't know, approach to the whole thing.
Well, I think it depends on the individual's personality. And I think how much he has the respect from the players. Players respect certain player coaches. They can be tough with him, firm with him. I mean, look at Nick Saban in football and all. He's tough and firm because players respect the hell out of everything he does. So I think it gets mad. I think you can see that success to the same degree, maybe not as much in the past, you know, the screaming, yelling kids today. You know, there's a tendency today, when things don't go a little bit right, let me pack the bags and let me go somewhere else rather than fight it out and prove, you know, I can do it. I can play it. I'll never forget when Steve Walford was playing for Indiana. And I'd say to him sometimes, and he talked to Isaiah, it'd be the same thing. Because Coach Knight had a real, it was a threat with him that he would get on the stars, man. He would get on the stars big time. And sometimes he'd sit there and say, what's he on him for? He's dreaming him, yelling at him. I remember once at that practice, and after practice, I said to Steve Walford, how do you take that? I mean, he was all over him about, you got to guard people. You got to cut without the ball. All you can do is shoot the ball and all that stuff, right? So he says to me, he says, Mr. Vitale, Dick or whatever, he called me, I don't know, at the times years ago. But basically, I remember the theory and the theme was, hey, I'm going to play. We're going to win. I'm going to graduate. And I'm learning so much about life. And so certain players can handle that and take it, especially if you're going to play. It's pretty tough to take. You're going to be ninth on the bench, 10th on the bench, where you can see maybe a little different elsewhere. But, you know, Bob was, I can tell you a quick story about Bob and I when he did for me. You got time to hear that?
Absolutely. I'd love to.
Bob Knight called me up one day and he said to me on the phone, this is years ago, and he said to me, look, you know, Bob does it very strong. You know, it's not just, hi, Dick. Look, I said, well, Bob, what's going on, man? He said, I just did something I want you to know. I said, I've called up every living Hall of Fame coach, and I've written to them, and I'm having them write a letter on your behalf in terms of having them write a letter on your behalf in terms of you belong to the Hall of Fame. I was shot down like three times. So, you know, and when they vote, whatever, it was really dominated by the NBA years ago, the Hall of Fame. So anyway, I said, why did you do that? Don't you tell me what to do. I know what to do. I did it on my own. I just want you to know that. And I want you to listen to me. I see you're nominated again. You're probably not getting it again. But you know what? I got the Hall of Fame for you. The Hall of Fame. You know why I got it for you? I'm going to mail them to you. I got letters from every living coach to the Hall of Fame saying that you should be in the Hall of Fame. They should have a category, contributions. And I got one letter that stands out. I have it handwritten from John Wooden to the Hall of Fame. How can we have a category that goes contributions to the game? What Dick Vitale has done to the game, what's selling the game, is passionate. And I was very touched by that. It's one of the reasons I asked him to present me. A lot of people don't know. That's one of the reasons. And I'll give you another example. I run a gala every year, but it means more to me than anything I do now, for raising money for kids battling cancer. And we honor different people. So one day I called him up and I said, hey, Bob, I have an idea. I'm a gala. I want to honor both at the same time, the winningest women's coach at the time and the winningest men's coach. So he said to me, just give me a date. I'm in. No debating. No, I got to talk to my agent. I'm in. He says, and you're going to get Pat Summitt. I said, you know what? I really don't know Pat that well. Well, look, let me talk to her and I'll get back to you. And he calls me back. 30 minutes later, it's done. Well, Pat and I now, we're coming and we raised millions of dollars. I mean, people don't see some of the things. Do I agree with everything he's done? Of course not. You know, sometimes he lets the emotion get the best of him and he created, but he's done a lot of good things, my friend.
You've always uplifted guys. You'll talk about the great things about Bob Knight, Al McGuire, Coach K, whoever. I mean, you illuminate the best thing these guys do. And there's so many in the business, Dick, who are competitive. They don't want to do it because they think it takes them down or whatever it is. And you've done this, and I don't think you were doing it for your own benefit, but it's also helped you because these guys are, I don't know how to exactly ask the question, but there's something about how you wanted to lift people up that I don't know if it comes natural, but it's a thing that just I find to be beautiful about you.
Well, I love people. I want my life. I love people. I like people. Trying to lend a helping hand. Just the other day, for example, a coach got fired at Boston College, Jim Christian. I don't even know Jim that well. I've met him a couple of times during the games, and I sent him a text message, and I said, Jim, I know that feeling. I was fired. Okay, you got two choices. Feel sorry for yourself and down, or pick up the pieces and look in the mirror and say, you know what, I'm going to prove I can do something. Because that's what I've done with my life. My wife picked me up and said, you got to get out of this rut that you're in. You got to understand that you got a whole life. I was in my 30s. And look what happened. I mean, if you would have told me when I got fired on that day, November 8, 1979, I'd be speaking to you and be in at the moment about 14 Hall of Fames. About 14, the National Basketball Hall of Fame, the College Hall of Fame, the Broadcasting Hall of Fame, the Sportscasting Hall of Fame, the Italian Hall of Fame. Coach where I coached in College Hall of Fame, where I coached in High School Hall of Fame, where I lived in, I mean, I'd start laughing. I said, you kidding me? I thought I was a nobody. Because I'll tell you, it's an empty feeling. When you're fired, you feel lost. You feel lost. You feel, rather than looking at all the great things you did, like I didn't make a fire, think about, oh, wow, we won 21 in a row when I was at Detroit, took them, beat Michigan State, beat all these teams. We beat Michigan while I was there. We beat Arizona. I said, but you don't think about that. You're thinking about, God, I didn't get it done, man. What a failure I am. And so then, because I try to, when coaches get fired, always try to contact them in a way to let them know that I, you know, feel for them.
Yeah, and it's a huge part of everyone's identity. You work so hard to get to this point in your career. Who am I without this?
Thing too, Mark, on TV, I try to be very objective, but you try not to hurt people. I don't think you have to hurt people. You can be critical. There's no wrong being critical if you're critical. But today, what we have with social media and what we have with radio talk shows and all, it seems like it's so easy to hurt people, especially if you never have to face them. You never have to face a guy. I'm looking at the face them all the time and rip them. You know, I'll never forget a lesson I learned. When I was with the Pistons, we had a noted columnist, became, I think, in the Hall of Fame, possibly baseball, Joe Fools, Detroit Papers, Free Press. He was the guy, one of the key guys that got me the job at the Pistons. He kept writing out of Pistons, need enthusiasm. They got to get this young guy down there with the, so I get the job, right? So now I'm struggling with the Pistons. And we're losing, and I'm just upset, constantly complaining about how can't win, can't this. And he gets a whole vicious column. I mean, buried. Said he belongs back in college. He's not ready for this night at all. I go to practice that day, and who the heck is standing in the locker room right there looking at me, Joe Fool. And he says, okay, I have my say this morning. You get your say this afternoon. And he taught me a lesson. Now, if you're going to rip somebody, it'll be tough for them. Let them be aware that you did it and give them the opportunity to respond. And it's a lesson I've learned.
It's one of the things that I respect about one of your colleagues at ESPN, Stephen A. He says a lot of stuff about a lot of people, but I'm right here, right? I mean, he doesn't dodge. He asks the questions directly, and there's an integrity in that. And it's not easy being on this side too, when you got to give an opinion, right? I mean, you care about these people, but you also have to have credibility.
Oh, absolutely. And you don't last, you know, I'm very proud. You don't last 42 years at ESPN with just awesome baby, get a T.O. baby. Let me tell you that. Plus I've been through, I don't know how many presidents that I've been through. And usually a lot of times when the higher ups are changed, because our business, unfortunately, is a very subjective feeling. It's not really objective. Somebody likes one guy's style, and everybody likes the other guy's style. But to be able to survive all that and have them tell me, I got a lifetime contract to where, as long as you want to work and you're able, because I've told them over and over again, nobody's going to have to tell me when it's over. If it's over, I can't remember the names, and I can't, don't have the excitement to go do a game, I made enough money, I'm going to call you up and simply say, the party's over. I'm praying that's not going to happen for many a year, because I tell you the truth, I feel probably as young as ever. If I didn't know, in fact, I know how old I am when I look in the mirror in the morning, but if you can tell me, I played singles tennis yesterday, right? I play all the time, singles a couple of days a week. I try to keep in shape. I try to watch what I eat in terms of I like to eat, but I try to do it in an intelligent way. And I've never, and I'm not saying there's nothing wrong with people want to drink in moderation, whatever, that's their prerogative. But if I told you this, I know you will not believe it. And my wife can verify, she's married to me 49 years. She has never, ever seen me, ever. And my buddies could tell you this, they used to call me Mr. Cranberry. I haven't had a drop of liquor in my body. So I think all of that has given me longevity, and it's given me to where people get amazed. The biggest thing I get is just this afternoon, okay? I'm having lunch at First Watch is where I go, because they give me a lot of money for the V Foundation for Kids. My buddy's the CEO, Chris Tomasso, and you know, I was there, and these guys come up to me, and they said, man, we watched you on TV last night. Where the heck do you get that energy? I can't believe it. You're coming, and there's no crowds. So it's a little tougher to, you know, to do the things you like to do. When you're in a crowd, it's a whole different ballgame. But I've never had a problem with that. I don't know what it is. I think it's my childhood, as you said, as a kid. Always was that way.
It's a gift, and it's also a learned mindset, a part of it, too. I mean, I've seen you. I've met you a couple times, Dick. I'm sure you don't remember, but like I shook your hand, and then you were so cordial, friendly, nice, just like happy to see this random guy who's saying hello to you, and just it's real. And that's personally like one of the many things I appreciate about you.
Rick Riley, I didn't know Rick Riley. Do you remember Sports Illustrated?
Sure.
Well, they had called me up, and Sports Illustrated was going to do a big feature on me. But part of the feature was he would have to travel me all day for a couple of days, follow me around wherever I did, and all. That's a no problem. No problem at all. Follow me, do whatever, do what I normally do. When I think initially, just my gut feeling, I think it was going to be a hatchet job. About this guy can't be this guy that we see on TV, so enthusiastic, so energetic with people. When he came to a speaking engagement I did, he came all over the game I did. He came, and he wrote the most glowing column about, in fact, 10 pages. He actually was a 10-page story about how, you know, basically saying the guy's real. You know, you can call me anything you want, but the one thing I've always been the same. In fact, the writers in Detroit, a couple of years ago, I ran into a few of the guys that covered Mike O'Hara. He's the cover of the Lions, covered me when I coached in college. And he sees me, he says, I tell people all the time, they say, oh my God, do you see him on TV? I enthusiasm. He said, come on, man, that's nothing from what we see. None of what we had here. They used to laugh, they'd get their pens out, their pads with notes, and they said, you can write a book, they said, after we interview him.
That's...
I've been blessed. I got a beautiful, you know, one thing in my life has been stability. 49 years married. Beautiful lady, beautiful. I overachieved big time. And I got 5 grandkids. They're healthy. They're really hardworking kids. One's at Notre Dame now as a freshman playing tennis there. I have twins who are seniors, just committed to go to Duke, both of them, nationally rated. I got a grandson that's an outstanding lacrosse player. He just committed. He's a junior in high school, wanted to get it over. He committed to Notre Dame for lacrosse. And I got a young girl who's a 9th grader, and she's right now top 10 in the nation in junior tennis. And so I got 5 kids, have goals. They have they know it. It takes hard work to achieve your goals. Academics are important to them. And I got a job that I've been with 42 years, with the Washington Speakers 40 years. So what's the common denominator here? It's, I like stability. I like the fact, you know, people say, haven't you thought about going to this place, that place during your career? Why? You pay me well. How much money are you getting paid? I get everything I want. I get the kind of cars I want to drive, the house I want to live in. And I work with good people. And they've been very good to me, treated me like royalty during my career.
Let's wrap up with this. I appreciate all the time, Dick.
That was awesome, baby.
It's hey.
Go.
I love it.
By the way, I won that audition.
Wait, say that again.
They had an audition, right? They would make it believe that we were trying to audition to be a guy. Oh, rep. That was the whole theme. Was my thing. Was it too much at the end? I said. Water in my head and looking at me. But bottom line is, I had so much fun doing it, really.
It's an awesome spot. And
the response, I can't believe. I haven't heard. This is honest truth. Guys, I haven't heard from Norm Garrett, now living in California. Oh, my God, I just saw your commercial. It's trying to crack me up big time. What they don't know, what I have to admit, even my brother says to me, he sees the commercial. He said, how did you get that bucket? Because that thing's got to be heavy. How did you get that over your head? I said, you know what they did? The beauty of production, the beauty of talented people in production. Initially, they tried to get me to get, I couldn't get the thing up. I mean, it was filled with water. It's heavy to start with and to get that thing up. So what they did was they had a pulley. And on a certain word, baby, the pulley would take the thing up. And it was like light as could be, like a feather for me to take that over. The magic of doing those commercials.
That just shows my intelligence and or detective level, because I didn't even think about that. That thing's enormously heavy, a huge thing of Gatorade. You got football players, they got to have 2 guys, you know, to lift it over. Hey, by the way, I also love the Dickey V Instagram in the hot tub. I mean,
I try to go in there, just relax a little bit, get my box. Something on my back gets so tight. I go in a jacuzzi, it just loosens it up. But, you know, I, like I said, I've lived a blessed life. I hope it's longer. My goal is to be the first guy in broadcasting ever. I've told people this ever at 100 years of age to walk out of courtside. And he's awesome, baby. I mean, why not think, right? You got to think big. You got to have some goals. I still write goals down. I still have dreams and things I want to do.
You sound great. You know, just listen to the Hall of Fame speech.
I like this guy.
Yeah, well,
books.
Well, you had a huge scare with cancer in the throat, and like, are you gonna lose your voice, and then what's gonna be, and am I gonna be around? Period. Am I gonna get to do what I love to do? And here you are.
You know what? You brought that up. 2008. It was the longest year for me ever. 2008. I quit. I was doing games. The only one knew I was suffering big time in terms of my partner, Dan Schumann, knew, and so did my boss, Dan Steer. And I would say, Dan, I can't do it. It was unbelievable. It was so tough to do, get words. So finally, they arranged for me to go to see this Dr. Steven Zeitelis. He's known as the number one throat guy in the world. He's operated on Adele, he's Steven Tyler, Lionel Richie. Oh, the list is unbelievable. So I went in there to see him. First time I ever was talked to by a guy like he talked to me. As I walked in, he didn't even know who I was, really. His staff was, I don't know much about basketball. My place is going crazy here that you're here. And well, that's the EV. So anyway, I said, as I tell, so I've seen a number of guys all tell me the same thing. Did this to my throat. I did this with all my yells, screaming, yelling. He stopped me and he said, I want to get this straight right now. You may be big in basketball, but I'm big in what I do. You're going to have one rule. You can listen to what I say. If you're not, then that's you go elsewhere. You're here because you got a problem. So sure enough, he goes into his machine, looks at my throat, was down, I'm coughing up stuff. If I called my wife over to a TV monitor that's recording everything, there's this problem. You got ulcerated lesions on your throat, all over your throat. And they said it could be cancer. Can't tell until you do surgery. Oh my God, I said, surgery? I'll be honest, I start crying. I'm an emotional guy. I'm like, surgery, cancer. Oh my God, my career, forget, was first thing in my mind at that time. It's over, done. Flew home. I went back to a couple of local guys I had seen, and they said they disagreed. I don't need surgery. Even though they respect, they knew his name. They said, we don't think at your age you need that surgery. The recovery and all, and just don't need it. So now I'm confused. So I call him up. And I said, Dr. Zeitelis, I said, I just decided I'm not going to have the surgery. But if I did, there's only one guy I want to do is you. I said, but I can tell you. He said, you're not going to do what? Who's telling you that? So he says, give me their email addresses. Give me their email addresses. I'm going to send them what I have seen. And I will guarantee in no time they'll get back and tell you to get the surgery. Sure enough, he did it. And they came back and said, you better get the surgery. And I did. And let me tell you this. 6 weeks, I couldn't say a word. Right? I wasn't allowed to say a word. I'd write things down on a blackboard. Oh, it was tough. But tough. I'd go out for breakfast. And I stand there and I have a blackboard there. And I say, people come over and want to talk to me. And I can't talk. But anyway, now I got to go back. And this was the most emotional I've felt in many a year. I had to go back. And he says to me, talk to me. I haven't talked in 6 weeks. And I'm like this. And I start crying. I said, I don't know if I can get those words. I couldn't. Talk to me like you're just talking. Just talk, count. One thing. And I did, and I started. And man, from then I've been lucky 12 years. So I thank God for Dr. Zeitelis. He came to the Hall of Fame. I got in the Hall of Fame. In my speech, if you listen to my speech, I had said, in my speech, again, talking from my heart, he happened to be sitting there, and I said, hey, Mr. Zeitelis, I can tell you this, the man right here in the front, he is... And boy, he's from Boston. He's the Larry Bird of the throat business, man. The Larry Bird. So my speech, so we talked to Magic, too, right? About magic as a kid.
Yeah.
I said, magic, I'm going to tell people why you're magic.
That was awesome. You go to the house and then, he's at the playground. It's in the middle of winter. He's shooting, he's doing the jump hook.
My wife heard my speech. 50, we go to dinner in the car, I'm speaking, so I don't want to forget anybody. When she heard my speech, she said, where was this? I was in awe of the crowd. Look at the people I looked up to like gods. Everywhere I looked, it was Jerry West, the logo. It was a Dr. Thompson. It was, you'd be bad. All guys that I fought the world of. And here I'm standing, I'm going to be inducted in the Hall of Fame. I'm like saying, oh my God.
Dick, thanks so much. Great talking to you.
Great. God bless. How can we have a category that goes contributions to the game? What Dick Vitale has done to the game, what's selling the game, is passionate. And I was very touched by that. Bob Knight called me up one day, and he said to me on the phone, this is years ago, and he said to me, look, you know, Bob does it very strong. You know, it's not just, hi, Dick. Look.
This program was recorded on tape for a live audience.
You can call me anything you want. But I tell people all the time, they say, oh my God, do you see him on TV? There's enthusiasm. I say, come on, man, that's nothing. I've been blessed. I got a beautiful, you know, one thing in my life has been stability.